The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now. You can find inspiring stories almost anywhere. For instance, check out the co-founders of Girls Who Do Interiors. This Miami-based design company was started by three friends when they were still in school. And right from the start, they turned to Chase for Business for everything from banking and payment acceptance to credit cards. And they handle them all in one place with the Chase mobile app. It's so important to have that kind of help when you're just starting out. Learn more at chaseforbusiness.com. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Pushkin. When I was thinking about who would compose the music for my life story, there was only one person I really considered. The New Zealand singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, synth-pop legend, Lady Hawk. Number one, because I'm a sucker for a killer hook. Sue me. And that is 100% Lady Hawk's wheelhouse. And number two, she's autistic. I figured if anyone would get the vibe we were going for, it would be her. But Lady Hawk, whose offstage name is Pip Brown, isn't just a pop star. She's also a parent, a prolific gamer, and now possibly my new best friend. But she can probably tell you all that herself.
Hey, I'm Lady Hawk, or you can call me Pip. I'm from New Zealand. I'm a singer-songwriter. I've been making music for a very, very long time now. And yeah, I'm just residing in Auckland currently, Auckland, New Zealand, and handling the pandemic like everyone else.
So do me a favor and like describe your music for people who haven't heard it.
So I guess my sound is like I'm big on nostalgia. So whatever, you know, that brings to me is what sort of comes out in my music. So like I try and make a song that makes you feel nostalgic listening to it, even though you mightn't have heard it before. So you know, vintage synths, driving beats, like just all that sort of stuff. I love nostalgic pop. So I guess I'm indie pop, electro, a little bit of rock.
Did you listen to a ton of music when you were a kid, or did you grow up in a musical household?
Yeah, I just loved music from as early as I can remember, and my mum has always been big into music. She, you know, she played guitar and plays piano, still does, sings. She was in bands as well, church bands, but bands nonetheless.
I love the caveat there, like yeah, she was in church bands,
yeah.
Yeah, so you were always like music was just like in the ether for you.
Yeah, yeah. And then my stepdad came along when I was like 12 years old, and he bought like drums into the house, and like he's an incredible drummer, and he plays everything. He plays like trumpet, you know, cornet, guitar, bass, everything. And he like our whole living room was just set up with instruments, and I learnt drums from like age 12 up until I left school. So drums were, that was my main instrument for a long time. And yeah, I was just surrounded in it, surrounded by music.
Describe Little Pip for me. What were you like as a kid?
I was incredibly shy, painfully shy, clung to my mum, very thoughtful and big daydreamer, lost in my head all the time, very sensitive, very, very sensitive. Yeah, I was just a sort of quiet, sweet, sweet little angel.
I mean, that's one way of describing yourself. That's good. That's very funny.
And then I became a teenager and that went out the window. But I was a very shy, very quiet kid who, you know, always struggled in social situations.
What does that sensitivity or what did that sensitivity or that struggle look like when you were young?
I think it looked like to other people, I think it looked like I wasn't paying attention, or I was weird, maybe. I got called weird a lot. I remember being around 7 years old, and we got in class, the teacher was like, right, everyone in class, paint a monster. You can do whatever you want, just paint a monster. And I was like, I took it so seriously. I was like, this monster's going to have 50 eyes and 60 legs, and I wanted it to have all these things, and I was painting and painting, and then it was lunchtime and she was like, right, everyone's finished. And I was like, but it's not finished. I haven't done 100 legs. I'm still painting the monster. Like, and so she let me stay for the rest of the day painting the damn monster, like, because I had to do every leg and every eye. And so that was me.
I feel that, like, I feel that acutely, because while I wasn't quite like that, like the particularity or the focus on a thing, like it has to be right, you know, yeah, is very familiar to me. And so this like sensitivity, like, was it at home? Was it just at school? Was it just sort of like in the world? Like, tell me how your sensitivity manifests when you're a kid.
So home was like my like comfort space, you know? So I was just myself, like freely, my quirky, you know, I was always a bit of a, you know, around my family and stuff, I was a bit of a clown and, but you know, and then, you know, school and the outside world was a bit harder, like, and I was very sensitive, especially sensitive to sound. Like, it's funny because I say this to people, like, and they're like, but you're a musician. I'm like, I know, like, I don't find, it's a different loudness I'm talking about. I don't find the loudness of music, that's not the sensitive thing for me. It's like, I remember being a little kid and walking down the street and a loud motorbike would go past and I would get this, like, internal, like, I would want to combust, like, just like I'd want to put my hands over my ears and scream. And I just hated that sound. So to this day, it's a trigger for me, like hearing a loud car or a loud motorbike. It's like, it gives me such a fright. So that was a huge, that those sorts of sounds for me were like a real big, they would scare me. I'd get really scared. And I sort of still have that a little bit, but I don't outwardly show it anymore.
What did that look like when you were a kid? Like, did it make you cry? Like, did anyone help you out? Like,
I would just like, you know, always cuddle into my mum and like bury my head in her and you know, cry sometimes. And I just think mum always thought I was just a really sensitive kid. You know, I was a little kid in the 80s and it's like, no one really thought much beyond that. You know, it's like, just, I was just sensitive, a little bit arty, you know?
Just a little bit arty. How old are you? Remind me of how old you are.
42.
I'm 43, girl. What? Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on.
There we go.
I was born in 1978. So I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, you know, being a weird little kid, you know, a lot of kids are weird. Because they get like really into their things, you know, and they haven't yet. They're still trying to figure out who they are. And so people are, I think, a little bit more permissive of like weirdo little kids. But like, you can't be a weirdo in middle school and you can't be a weirdo in high school. And I wonder, like, did you come to perceive your so-called weirdness in any different way as you got older?
Yeah, I just never understood why I didn't. I could see that I didn't feel like the other kids, or like the other girls, at least. I didn't see myself in other girls. And I struggled with that. Like, you know, I was a little bit different, like in the sense that, like, I just wasn't girly. I guess a lot of it's, there's a lot of stuff going on here. You know, there's like my sexuality that I wasn't aware of then. There's like, you know, possible mental health stuff going on, like just the fact that I'm sensitive, all these different things, you know, going on that I was completely oblivious to. So I think over the years, as I got older, I learnt to adapt. And like, I was always heavily into music. And by the time I got to like 16, I was just fully immersed in music, and I was playing in bands in school. And all of a sudden, kids thought my weirdness was cool. So like, I was in a band and I was playing drums, and I was odd. I was a little bit kooky. And that's when I realized that doing music was something that people could relate to, and it seemed to draw people to me. And so like, that was a way for me to connect. That was like the first time I remember thinking, oh, I can connect to people now because everyone loves music and I love music and I play it. And yeah, and that also, unfortunately, around the same time was when I learned that drinking helps my social anxiety. So that's when the teen drinking started.
Oh God.
I know.
What was the name of your first band? Do you remember?
Oh my God, it's the worst name. We were called Gel, like the hair gel. It's just, I don't even know who thought that,
like,
name up.
Like,
but
G-E-L?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's not, I don't think that's terrible.
I remember, like, at the time thinking it was terrible. I was like, shit, this is bad.
So music was like your escape. Like, music was where you could sort of bury yourself in a good way, and like, you found relief there.
Yep. Yeah, always have. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then like, at what point were you like, I think this is like my path. Like, I think this is like, or maybe you didn't make that decision. It just was made for you because you were having increasing success.
So when high school finished, I went to university and studied a Bachelor of Design. So while, like, at the same time as applying for that, I applied for the School of Music in Wellington, and I ended up deciding to go to the School of Design. While at the design school, I met a couple of other kids exactly the same age as me who wanted to be in a band. And I was like, yeah, I play drums, play guitar, like, you know, let's start a band. So I started a band. And we were just like popping off in my town, you know, like, it was going really well. And that's when I was like, I realized, because I was majoring in photography, I realized everything I was doing in my degree was music related. So I would, every project was photographing bands or going to live gigs. And, you know, like, all my off-campus activities were like music editor for the local magazine. I was like doing all this sort of stuff. And I was like, this is actually what I want to be doing. I'm really glad I'm not studying it, because sometimes studying something can take the joy out of it.
Totally.
Yeah. So I ended up like touring with my band. We went to the States and everything, and I ended up missing my graduation because I was in New York playing a show. So I think that's like, that was kind of the whole awakening for me. I was like, yeah, this is all I'm going to do now.
So you've gone to college, but you're skip your graduation. You're in this band. It's successful. Like, did you feel then like you're like, oh, I'm not a weirdo, I'm not different, like my struggles, my socializing, like everything kind of felt better? Or was that just under the surface for you?
Yeah, it was like life just kept moving for me, and like, I didn't want to stand still. And I did have crippling anxieties, but I also, I couldn't stand to not keep moving, you know, like, I needed to keep moving. So I went wherever the music took me. And I would say the fact that I've done music as a career and I've literally had to force myself to be in situations that everything inside of me is going, no, don't get on that plane. Don't sit in that fuselage with 300 strangers. You know, like every part of my body was telling me not to do that. Yet I had to constantly do it. I just constantly be on airplanes, you know. And so I knew I still had some stuff going on. Like I knew there was some crippling stuff going on. But that's just for me. I was like, I have to keep going. So I have to do whatever it takes to make this easier, which unfortunately for me was drinking and taking pills, which was like just self-medicating with Xanax and alcohol. So that's how I was able to just like go on the plane and like play shows and do all this stuff. But I knew I had to do it. I just didn't know how to without the help of these other things.
Right.
Yeah, I think I've always had a lot of ambition, but I always needed more. I was just like this hungry monster that was never satisfied, you know, and I just needed more and more and more, and I wanted to just devour everything and see as much as I could, and the desire for all of that overrode the inside stuff that was going on and telling me to stay put.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way I'm glad. I know I'm a bit of a sort of like an oxymoron. I'm like, I'm a little bit of both, and I'm opposite. You know, I'm one thing and then another, but it's because I have to have these things done. I can't not see something through.
Right.
I have to do it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you're speaking my language here. I feel as though I'm like an introverted extrovert, and
yeah, that's what I've always said about myself too.
Right. And that, you know, it is, you know, I mean, going through this process, like, of, you know, getting a diagnosis and then having to tell people and people being like, get out, like, shut up.
You know, yeah, no, you're not.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, interesting that you in this 30 seconds became an autism expert and you're telling me about my life. But OK, cool. But I wondered, like, did you ever have a clue? You're like, because you felt like you were a little bit weird, a little bit different. Then you found music and it was a relief. But did you sense like there's something else?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was that feeling for me. And when I was living in Melbourne, I was struggling a lot with going outside. I was struggling with like getting on public transport to go to my job, which was, I worked at a bar, and I was like, I remember thinking to myself, this shouldn't be this hard for a person. Other people don't find it that hard to walk out their front door and like get in a train, or is it because I was in Melbourne, get on a tram and you know, get the number 86 tram to Collingwood where I worked. But for me, it was like I had the cyclical thoughts in my head of everything that could go wrong in the time that I stepped out of the door and hopped onto the tram. So for me, my biggest fear has always been the unpredictability of other people. And I hate getting on like public transport and not knowing what's going to happen, because strangers are just like crazy, instantly crazy to me. I'm like, anyone could do anything at any point. And like, so I hopped on a tram. I really mentally worked myself up to it. And I got on the tram. I was like sweating and I felt sick. I was like, I'm nauseous. And I was sitting there and this like junky couple hopped on the next stop. And instantly the chick just puked on the ground.
No.
And I went, and that's my worst, that's like my worst nightmare. Like you couldn't put me in a worse situation. And I was like, ah. I was having a meltdown and like, had to get off the tram, and I called my girlfriend at the time and I was like, I'm off the tram. Come get me. Help me. A junkie puked. Like that was
I'm laughing so much because this is exactly my feeling. Like I feel you on this so hard, because like I do not like that unpredictability of like any kind of erratic behavior is very stressful to me. So it's like
me too. And I'm fearful that the thing is going to impact me. Like
yes.
What's happening. I'm fearful that it's going to happen on me.
Oh yeah. That's well, you don't want to get barfed on.
I don't want to get barfed on or pooped on or like all the things I've seen happen.
My social anxiety when I was a kid, up and through probably, you know, college, was like that I would throw up in public. And I would make myself so nervous about the idea. And I would, and because I was anxious about that, I would get a stomach ache. And the stomach ache would say to me, oh, you're going to throw up in public. So I would have to like sit out. Like I'd be all ready to go for like Halloween trick or treating and then feel super anxious, feel like I was going to throw up and then have to sit it out. And I never puked ever. I never did.
You've just described my entire childhood. That exact thing was my thing. And I always would work myself up to the point where I felt nauseous. And then I'd be like, I'm going to puke. I'm going to puke. I'm going to puke. I'm going to puke. And I'd be like, please don't puke.
Oh my God.
I would never puke. And I'd always have to get sent home from school as well. Like, and I'd be like, I can't do this class. I feel sick. I'm going to be sick.
Right,
like,
right.
It was just like, was awful. And it followed me around for years, that shit.
Oh
like,
my God. Me too. I mean, it is so debilitating. And, you know, it feels so bad to have anxiety like that, that is irrational, that is preventing you from doing things. Anyway, so you're like on this tram and the junkie barfs and you're like, I'm done. And so I'm guessing at that point you were like, this feels atypical.
Yeah, it was, for me, it was, I didn't have any words to put to it. And I was like, there's something going on. And I knew I needed help, but I didn't seek it out for a while after that. Like, I then moved to Sydney, and because Nick, who I was making music with, lived in Sydney, and just the scene there was where I wanted to be. I had loads of friends up there making music, so me and my girlfriend at the time moved up to Sydney, and which was an amazing move for me, but it also sort of made me face that stuff head on, because I was like, well, now I'm living in King's Cross in Sydney, which is like junkie capital of Australia, you know, and I was like, this is, you know, I was sort of living behind the police station and I heard the things I heard at nighttime. I'll tell you, I couldn't, it was awful. Like, and the anxiety levels were just terrible. And, you know, like my thought patterns. And I remember thinking I need to talk to somebody about it. And I started seeing a therapist in Sydney. And I remember after seeing her for a bit, she said, I think you have mild Asperger's. She so nonchalantly said that. And I was like, what? Yeah, I think you have mild Asperger's. And I was like, right, okay, bye. And I left and never went back.
Right.
And then I spent years with that and didn't know how to process it or what to do with it. And like went through this entire journey without ever following it up. And then finally like got sober, which was great. Did it all on my own.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. So I'm 7 years sober now.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And then started seeing a therapist 2 years ago who also like he's amazing. And he's explained everything about the way my brain works. And he also diagnosed me with OCD, with obsessive compulsive disorder, of the not the type where you like have to turn a light switch on and off or do that sort of, but the repetitive cyclical thoughts is like that's all wrapped up in everything to do with you. So, you know, and generalized anxiety disorder and depression, of course, just to, you know, round it all off nicely.
I know. I mean, it's always like a super twofer, you know, it's never just one thing. It's like a whole collection. It's like a cornucopia of shit you know, and how to wade through it. And so for you, like you get sober and you have like, you go see this great therapist. Did it fuck you up learning all this stuff? Did it provide you with relief? Like,
yeah,
you know, was it like, finally I understand myself? Or was there some period where you're like spinning out because it's like, so much stuff?
I think the point I got to where I got help with my current therapist, who I've been with for a couple of years now, I was at one of the worst points in my life. So I think I was at that point where I had postnatal depression as well.
Oh,
that's another
Lord.
Lovely thing I was diagnosed with. So I was at such a point in my life that I was desperate to try anything. I just wanted to be helped. I felt terrible. And I remember thinking, I don't want to be this person for my daughter. I want to do everything in my power to make myself the best person I can be, not just for myself, but for her. So she sees me at my best all the time. Well, obviously not all the time, but you know, like as good as I could give her. So, I sort of went to see him and all the stuff he explained to me and the diagnosis and, you know, starting medication was just an absolute relief. Like I felt like, you know, I said to him it through tears because I was crying, as you do in mm-hmm, therapy. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just wish that this had happened to me years ago. Like, I wish I'd met you years ago, you know, and he just listened to me and he knew exactly. And he explained stuff to me like, he was like, oh, of course you're feeling like that. That's because this is happening. Your brain's making way too much adrenaline. It's sending out SOS signals every time you see something mildly stressful to you. It's sending out adrenaline like something horrific's about to happen. He was like, so that puts too much adrenaline in your system. It makes you exhausted. Your serotonin's depleted. So we need to help your brain to get back to making serotonin at a normal level. So that he explained it in that way. And I was like, no one's ever said that to me. Like, I've never had it explained like that. And, you know, he talked me through the medication. He was like, you're going to feel really bad at first because it does, make, you know, but you got to push through it. And he was like, message me every single day. You know, when you take the pill, pop your earbuds in and go for a walk, listen to a podcast, you know, get into that headspace and push through it. And then after, you know, hopefully after just a week, you should be feeling great. And, you know, having that connection and that sort of like, just nonchalance, but like very, he was just so careful with the way he talked to me. And he was very like caring and like made it out like nothing was a big deal. Like, oh, of course you're worried about taking the pill. Of course this, you know, like I've always been so scared of having an allergic reaction that would make me throw up. So it all goes back to that.
Yeah. So like you landed on a name or names for how you were feeling and how you were acting. And that was a great relief amongst other things. Like, how did you talk to your friends and family about it? Did you, or were you just like, this is my private thing to deal with and, you know, I'll just deal with it?
With the Asperger's thing, like when that happened, I did tell people, and then I faced years of, oh, everyone's a bit like that. Oh, no, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, I faced years of that, so I just stopped talking about it.
Yeah.
And then with the OCD diagnosis and, you know, all the other stuff, I think because that's happened in the last 2 years, discussion with mental illness is so much more out in the open now, so that when I've told my friends, everyone's actually gone, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. Yeah, we understand, you know. So I've had, especially with the postnatal depression, I think that was very obvious to everybody because I was not, you know, I was not coping very well. So I think like having those diagnoses, I just had a lot of support from people. And I think the Asperger's one was because it happened so long ago.
Yeah.
Was, you know, unfortunately the timing of that just wasn't great.
Right.
This wasn't great for me and for people's understanding or acceptance of it. So I just, I unfortunately just had to bury it and move on.
Yeah.
Which is what I did. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that people's understanding is that much better now.
No.
I mean, And it just, like, people don't get it. Like, people don't have a sense of what that means. And people just think, like, you should be, like, Rain Man or, like, rocking in a corner or something like that. Which, like, I'm sometimes I am rocking in a corner. So shut up. But that's been really, you know, if you tell people, I'm guessing, at least women, you say, I have postnatal depression. People are like, I get it. Like, I understand. Yeah, yeah. And even with anxiety, I think we know enough about that. People are like, I get it. But I think if you say autism, people are like, what the fuck? Like, what do you mean? Yeah. What are you talking about? You know? And that's frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. Because the way it's been portrayed, I think, in media is just one aspect of autism as well. Like they say, it's a spectrum. Right. As is everything, you know, sexuality, everything. But the way the media has always portrayed it in films is the way I think people think that's what it is. So, like, when you say, oh, I've got Asperger's, oh, what's that? Oh, it's a, you know, it's on the autism spectrum. They're like, no, you're not.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and then there's no real response that you can give that feels satisfying. You're just like...
Yeah, I'm always like, all right.
Yeah, whatever. I guess you're an expert. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there, like... Now that you've sort of processed all of these things in a, you know, in a healthier, safer way, like, have you come to a different understanding of the way that all of these traits operate in your life? Like, have you made peace with it or with this collection of diagnoses or traits or whatever, where you just, like, you feel like, okay, that's me. Like, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I have. And I think I've come to a point where I'm really proud of myself. Like, I'm proud of who I am and the sort of person it makes me. And I'm proud that I got to the point in my life where I could do some positive things for my mental health and be, you know, surround myself with people who can support me and help that. I think it's for a long time I was running away and ignoring it and didn't want to face it. So yeah, I'm in such a good place now, and I'm glad I am who I am.
I mean, just talking to you, like, you seem like a total delight and like a joyful person. And I think people have a notion that, you know, you say you're autistic or neurodivergent, if anybody even understands what that is, but like that your life is all suffering and that you're sad and it's bad. And you know, to be able to say, nah, I'm cool, like, I'm in a good place, and, like, knowledge, I mean, not to be cheesy, but, like, the knowledge is power kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's true.
One last question. Do you want to be my autistic friend?
Yes.
Yes! I'm in! Yes!
Woo! You can show me all the things in DC.
Oh, my God, it would actually be a great honor and a pleasure of mine if you came here. Thank you so much, Pip.
Awesome.
Really appreciate
it. Oh, thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Talk soon.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.
You can check out my new best friend Lady Hawk's latest album, Time Flies, on your favorite streaming service. And you can find her on Instagram and Twitter at LadyHawk4U. That's Lady Hawk with an E. This episode was produced by David Jaw and edited by Soapy Crane. Mix engineering by Jake Gorski. Special thanks to Janina Finn for making this happen. Thanks to you, friend, for listening.
The tradition of breaking tradition continues with the return of the Unconventional Awards from T-Mobile for Business at Mobile World Congress. This is an event that celebrates innovators whose bold actions took their industries to new places. If that sounds like you and you're a T-Mobile for Business customer, enter today. If you win, you'll be publicly honored among some of the most influential leaders in industry, and me, I'll be there too. Enter now at tmobile.com/unconventional awards. See you there.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.